You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday the 7th of November 2022, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at RadioAlbion.com. Well, I hope you managed to check out the live stream that we had on yesterday afternoon. We had Sam Melia introducing all the speeches from the Patriotic Alternative Northern Conference. I think he did a very good job. He looked very professional in his waistcoat and tie, with a green screen behind him with the Patriotic Alternative logo. And the speeches themselves, I think the video team did a really good job of the editing. I think there was three or four different views on the video. They had lighting there, and they used the audio that I managed to record from the PA system, which we had. So the audio was exceptional quality as well. And we have each of the individual speeches at RadioAlbion.com that people can download if they haven't heard them yet. We have the audio versions, the MP3 versions here. And I just wanted to draw people's attention to that because they were posted up on the website yesterday on the Sunday. And we don't normally have much content that we produce over the weekends, but this week we delayed posting the Patriotic Alternative speeches so that a fundraiser could be carried out. And if you do wish to donate to Patriotic Alternative, then just go to the Mark Collette or Laura Towler Entropy page, or you can go to patrioticalternative.co.uk/donate, I think the address is. Well, let's get into the news for today. And first off, I want to talk about the sort of money that is being spent on these crazy left-wing projects. Tens of millions of pounds earmarked for universities in Britain have reportedly been spent on far-left projects, including examining the allegedly racist history of a collection of dried plants and increasing LGBTQ+ representation in medieval history, a report has claimed. Well, there'd be a bit of a difficulty in representing homosexuals in medieval history when you consider that sodomy was the death penalty. It was a capital punishment right up until 1835. So anybody that was involved in that would have been hanged if they had been found. So you're not really going to find many people talking about it in a positive way in medieval history. So what they're really looking to do there is to distort history and pretend that it was completely different to how it actually was. I can't see how else they could spend this money trying to improve the representation of homosexuals in medieval history. This racist collection of dried plants, I mean, it could be two things, really. It could be the names that are actually used for the plants, or it may be simply that it's white people actually named the plants, because of course it's only white people that have an interest in botany that went around the world collecting plants and naming them. Of course, people that actually live in their countries, they have a name for their local plants, but as far as I'm aware, it's only white people that were interested in traveling around the world and collecting all these specimens and identifying the links that there are between one particular plant in one country and another particular plant in another. I mean, for instance, if you look at oak trees, you look at the oak leaves of the European oak, the British oak, and then you compare it to the American oak, they're both quite different, but they're quite clearly the same plant. And it's only whites that were interested in that, and only whites that are interested in cataloguing all the different animals, for instance, and linking them into the different species types. I guess in Africa, they're just more interested in which animals you can eat. And beyond that, or which animals that you can utilize for various purposes, work purposes, things like that. That's the sort of thing that indigenous peoples are usually interested in, but they're not really interested in just studying animals and studying plants just so that we can learn more about the world. Dr. Richard Duchesne, I think that's his name. You'll find him on Twitter. He's recently been pointing out a lot of these things that white people are good at doing, things like philosophy, science. And I think he's basically providing the evidence for when he says that 99% of everything that's ever been invented has actually been invented by white people. I do recommend people check him out. Ricardo Duchesne, I think his name is. He's a well-known author over there in Canada, I believe. Getting back to this article here, UK Research and Innovation, a non-departmental government body, which is responsible for distributing £8 billion in taxpayer money annually to universities, has been accused of spending £27 million on embarrassing woke projects by leftist academics. And again, how can you say that this is research and innovation? Just to be attacking the names that have been given to dried plants, or criticizing the fact that there isn't very much homosexual representation in medieval times. Research and innovation should be all about inventing new things. And what it's saying here is that this money is being used just to attack our history, basically, and to try and change history, and to try and find ways to make white people feel embarrassed about their history. Amidst a drive to cut public spending by the government, the UKRI's budget has come under increasing scrutiny. According to a report from The Telegraph, a newspaper close to the governing Conservative Party, an analysis of greenlit projects was presented last month to the Department for Business, Energy and Industrial Strategy by then Cabinet Minister Jacob Rees-Mogg, MP. I suspect he was not very pleased with what he found there. Unfortunately, Jacob Rees-Mogg is no longer in the cabinet. He was one of my favourite politicians. He's not everybody's cup of tea. He is very upper class, but I think it gives a good example of an upper class Englishman. Basically, we do have the class system within Britain. I don't think it's a bad system to know which class you are in and to be a representative of it. And Jacob Rees-Mogg, I think, would make a very good prime minister. So we will never see him as prime minister, of course, for that reason. A source involved in the discussions told the broadsheet JRM raised it with the permanent secretary, saying this is not a good use of taxpayer money when our budgets were under threat. Well, I would say it's not a good use of taxpayer money at all, let alone when budgets are under threat. We should not be giving out money in order to attack our own traditions and attack our own history. This is what's so ludicrous about these anti-white ideas. It's mainly white people that are doing it. And we're just taking an axe to our history and our heritage, and looking at ways that we can try to make ourselves feel guilty and embarrassed about it and changing it. And it's ourselves that are doing this. It's really maladaptive. It's the equivalent of self-harming. So many of these academics are just damaging our own history, and they seem to take a great pleasure in doing it. We have comedians that joke about these things, and what it ends up doing, it ends up giving white people a distorted sense of themselves. It makes white people end up feeling guilty for who they are. It makes the youngsters at school really depressed because they feel that their ancestors were responsible for causing lots of harm around the world and oppressing indigenous peoples, when the truth of the matter really is that we really did help these indigenous peoples. And all you have to do is look at their demographics to understand that. All you have to do is look at what their countries were like before the British went there, and they didn't have trains, they didn't have universities. I mean, a lot of them didn't even know how to read and write. And yet we're told that white people oppressed them and how terrible we were. And this is being done by our own people. As I say, it's being done by our own academics mainly. And that's why I criticize it, because it's really just being self-critical. We should be self-critical, but not in the ways that these anti-white academics are. Jacob Rees-Mogg apparently said, we are spending millions on embarrassing low-grade projects, and does it really meet any of our department's ambitions? And I'm glad he's drawing attention to this. One such project, which received taxpayer funding from the UKRI, was reported to be Decolonise the Sloane Herbarium, in which academics at Queen Mary University in London embarked on studying the relationship between British imperialism and a collection of 120,000 plants currently housed in the History of Nature Museum, I should say. And again, this, what they're really looking at here is the fact that the person that actually paid for this had a tenuous connection to slavery. But all the philanthropists a couple of hundred years ago would have had connections to slavery, because slaves were considered to be another form of merchandise that could be sold. It was the merchandise that Africa had to sell, mainly was slaves. So all of these trading companies, they didn't just trade in silk and cloths and coffee and sugar and all that sort of thing, and tobacco. They also traded in slaves. So you had people that were working for these trading companies that today they'll say, oh, well, they're linked to slavery. But if Africa didn't sell its merchandise that it had, if it wasn't actually selling its slaves that it had, then it really wouldn't have had much that it could actually trade with the rest of the world. I mean, you're talking about a time before we had gold mines there and oil and gas and the other sort of things, that resources that we know that Africa has. We're talking about a time before those resources were being tapped, and the black Africans, they really didn't have much else that they could actually trade with the rest of the world. And they wanted to have contact with the rest of the world. They wanted the weapons, they wanted the clothing, and they wanted all the things that the white world actually had. But the only thing that they had that they could exchange for these goods was human resources. And human resources were required out there in America, in the South, where it was particularly hot. It was very difficult for white people to actually work there, so they needed black people to work there. And the way that things were back then, it wasn't like now where you get paid an hourly wage. You would work and you would get paid in kind for it. And there were white people that did the same, that were indentured servants. And you really can't find anybody from, I guess, 1700 to the 1800s who doesn't have some kind of a connection to slavery, because it was the system of employment that we had for thousands of years. If you read the Bible, it's the only system of employment that existed in the Bible. That's why it talks about it a lot. And that's why these people that actually owned the slaves referred to the Bible as justification for it. And the fact that they were using the Bible as justification for it shows you that they were God-fearing Christian men, and they kept to the instruction in the Bible of how you are supposed to treat your slaves, treat your workers, basically, because that was the system that we had. So I don't think they would have mistreated their workers in any way. There would have been some that did that. There would have been a small portion of people that mistreated their slaves, and they would have been ostracized in society for doing that. You know, the whole narrative around slavery is very warped from the truth. And if you want to learn the truth, you really have to go back to the original source documents, because you're certainly not going to learn the truth from looking at Hollywood movies about it or TV series about it. And the sort of people that are actually doing this, that are looking at botanical collections and trying to find links to slavery, their impression of what slavery is comes from these movies, and it comes from books today. I've had debates with people on Twitter, and their references, their evidence, is all books that have been written in the last 10, 15 years. None of their evidence actually goes back to books or essays that were written 200 years ago. Well, continuing with the article here, the collection, this herbarium collection, was gathered between the 1680s and the 1750s by over 300 botanists and others, most of whom would likely have played little role in Britain's colonial past. However, Sir Hans Sloane, after whom the collection was named, has become a target over his connection to the slave trade. A naturalist and collector, Sloane would become instrumental in the formation of the British Library, the British Museum, and the Museum of Natural History when he bequeathed 71,000 items to the country. So if we say, well, he earned some money from slavery, what did he do with it, though? He bequeathed it to start off all these organizations, the Museum of Natural History, the British Museum. I mean, that really shows that he wasn't a bad person, doesn't it? I mean, he's made this money, and what's he done with it? He's built museums. What did the black African chiefs do with the money that they made from the slavery? They made just as much wealth from trading the slaves. Well, they really didn't do very much with it, did they? There's a picture from, I think, 150 years ago. Well, maybe sooner than that. And it was the biggest slave trader in one of these African countries. And they were the first person in Africa to purchase a motor car. So these black African chiefs, they bought things for themselves. They bought great palaces for themselves and they showed off a lot of wealth, but they didn't share that wealth with their people, which is what the British people did. These great British philanthropists, people like Edward Colston, that bequeathed lots of money to set up universities and institutions. And you've got the same thing here. You've got this Hans Sloan, who has helped to set up the museum and bequeathed 71,000 items to the country so that these things could be shared with people so that everybody could see them. And we're being told today, oh no, he must have been a very mean person that mistreated slaves. He can't have been if he was a really generous person like this. And he's not responsible for the way that slaves were treated, is he, really? The people that purchased a slave, you could say that he may have been responsible for the way that they were transported, and the way that they were transported, it looks like they were sort of closely together. But that would have been the same for any cargo. You would have put as much as possible in there. And if lots of the cargo died, if lots of the slaves died on the way over there, then they would have lost lots of money, wouldn't they? So they would have tried to keep the slaves as best as they could, as alive and healthy, because they wanted to make the money from them, didn't they? If they ended up dying, then they wouldn't make any money from them. And I think the actual slaves were worth more than the people that they had working on the ships. Lots of the people that were working on the ships ended up catching disease, and they weren't worth any money to the ship's owner, were they, if you were working on the ship? But if you were a slave, you were actually worth something. Another project embarked on at taxpayers' expense saw researchers at Nottingham Trent University question how medieval castles around Britain could increase the representation of the LGBTQI+ community in their exhibits, despite the inherent difficulties in doing so. And of course, I've already pointed out this inherent difficulty in doing so was that it was the death penalty if you got caught being involved in that. And we make the mistake today of looking at it and saying, well, there's a community here. It's the LGBTQ community. They have their own areas in cities. They have their own cities even, really, when you look at places like Brighton. And there'll be a gay community, a gay village, which is mainly filled up with homosexuals. And they identify with their sexuality as that's their identity. Well, back then in medieval times, if you were caught engaging in this sort of thing, then you were executed. So there wasn't a community. It wasn't a part of somebody's identity. Why would you make that a part of your identity? It was a crime back then. So their identity would have been something else, and there certainly wasn't a community. They would have been a part of the main community of everyone, rather than having their own homosexual community, I think, but just because of the nature of the fact that it was a crime. And you can look at the prevalence of it as well by looking at the number of people that were actually executed for it or were punished for it. And I don't think it was really that many. There has been a big increase in the numbers of people who identify as homosexuals, coinciding with the promotion of it and coinciding with the hormone disruptors that we have in the environment. Greenwich University, meanwhile, was granted public money to examine the cultural diversity in experimental sound, as the academics claimed that noise is overwhelmingly dominated by white, affluent male practitioners. That's interesting. What do they mean there? Cultural diversity in experimental sound. Are they talking about music? Are they talking about experimental music, synthesizers, new genres? I mean, it is white people that are most inventive with music, always coming up with new ways to write music, new forms. Or are they just talking about general talking, the sort of noise that is made when people are talking at universities and what have you? And of course, it's mainly going to be academics, white academics, because whites have the highest average IQ. It's difficult to know what they're actually talking about here, isn't it? Noise is overwhelmingly dominated by white affluent male practitioners. Defending the projects, a UKRI spokesperson claimed, UKRI carefully targets the investment of £8 billion in taxpayers' money each year in a diverse portfolio of activity that fuels the UK's world-class research and innovation endeavour. And most people think R&I, research and innovation, it's all going to be about new inventions, basically, making improvements on the things that we already have. They don't want to see it going on things like trying to find racist connections to herbarium and botany. He continues, our remit spans all disciplines and all sectors, including complex social, economic, political and cultural issues. Decisions on the projects we support are made via a rigorous peer review process by relevant independent experts from across academia and business. And I dare say they've all been told that they have to promote diversity, and the peer review process is probably dominated by left-wing academics, because we know that these universities are dominated by left-wing academics, and that's why these projects end up being passed and this money ends up being diverted to them. In the wake of the resurgent Black Lives Matter movement in 2020, educational institutions across the United Kingdom used the politically charged moment to push the long-standing leftist goal of decolonising the curriculum and combat the supposed ills of the British Empire and take on its alleged legacy of white supremacy in the modern day. And what is decolonising the curriculum? It's just removing white people from everything. And a lot of the subjects to do with history and classics, and if you take white people out from them, then there's nobody left. So what they do is, very dishonestly, they will try to pretend that Africans in the years before Christ were actually black Africans, when of course they weren't. Carthage, what is now Tunisia, that was white people that were there. It was Phoenicians. And when we talk about African Romans, African senators and things like that that were in Britain, they were white. They were from North Africa. They weren't the sub-Saharan Africans. So it's very dishonest the way that they do this decolonizing. They're basically Africanizing or black Africanizing people that were actually white. This goes on throughout history as well. Particularly the BBC like to do this. They like to portray people that we know were white but actually came from Africa. Because after the Romans, you had the Vandals and you had these Germanic tribes that were in Africa that took over. And one of them actually came to Britain. He's written into our histories as the King of Africa. And of course, the BBC and these modern day historians will then try to portray them as being black Africans, as sub-Saharan Africans. The sub-Saharan Africans were below the Sahara. They couldn't actually get there to North Africa at these times. There's also this attempt to decolonize music, remove all the white composers from the classical music. And of course, then you don't have any other composers because it's only white people that make this music, this classical music. So then what they try to do is they'll try to bring in African musical styles and claim that they are the equivalent of classical music. We've even seen attempts to remove sheet music altogether, because that's seen as being colonial, because that was invented by white people. All of this decolonizing the curriculum is just basically remove everything to do with white people. And the people that are doing it forget that reading and writing and writing down the notes for music and all that sort of thing, it was all invented by white people. The electricity that they're using to type the words and the computers that they're using, they all come from white people as well. So this decolonizing everything, it's not actually truthfully decolonizing it. It's just trying to be anti-white, basically. The Decolonise the Curriculum drive has seen universities and other institutions go after subjects such as sheet music, medieval English literature, Charles Darwin's theory of evolution, and lectures on tropical viruses. And that's quite a varied list there, isn't it? Let's have a look at some of the titles for that. The headlines: woke Oxford music professors claim Western sheet music has complicity to white supremacy. Of course, that's because it was white people that invented the whole idea of writing down music and working out what the notes were. Another headline that we have here: woke university pushes decolonized curriculum to replace medieval English courses, because we can't have medieval English, because the English are white people, of course. If you're going to decolonize it, you can't have medieval English. I mean, they're even talking about removing the word Anglo-Saxon, because Anglo-Saxon has connections to white people, so of course that has to be removed as well. They're actually going to be removing Chaucer's The Canterbury Tales and the Anglo-Saxon epic poem Beowulf, and they're all going to be replaced with courses focusing on sexuality, diversity, race, and ethnicity, because of course we can't have Beowulf, because Beowulf is white. There weren't any black people involved in Beowulf. Darwin's theory of evolution justifies white male supremacy, claims woke university. Well, of course, the theory of evolution is the survival of the fittest, isn't it? I mean, it states that all these different creatures are competing against one another, and the fittest survive and the fittest go on to reproduce. And of course, this theory of evolution, it also gets extended to evolutionary psychology and group psychology, and the ways that different people groups compete against one another, and the techniques that they develop in order to be successful. And of course, Professor Kevin MacDonald has done some sterling work on this, looking at Jewish techniques, because the Jews as a group have managed to survive as a people group, as a minority amongst a larger group for many, many years. And they've managed to succeed in gaining a lot of power and a lot of influence despite being such a small group. And the theory of evolution says that the techniques that they have developed must be superior techniques because they have worked very well for them. And each different people group has different ways of trying to compete amongst the others. I mean, white people, our people groups tend to use force and intelligence because we have the strength there, whereas the Jews ended up using their intellectual abilities and their business abilities more than anything else, because they're not quite so physical. And when you think of a Jew's physique, it's very different to when you're thinking of a European's physique, for instance. So the theory of evolution, as it says here, that justifies white male supremacy. We're going to have to get rid of that one as well. Decolonize COVID. Top university claims the study of viruses is rooted in white supremacy. Let's have a look at that one. What is that one about? The alma mater of the Chief Medical Officer for England, Chris Whitty, who has led the government's scientific response to the coronavirus, has vowed to reform its curriculum in order to make the study of tropical diseases anti-racist. A guide issued to staff at the LSHTM told staff that they should examine how they benefited from colonialism and racism. If they are white, middle class, able-bodied, cis, heterosexual, European or North American, and do not have to worry about our immigration status. Well, I should imagine the thing with tropical diseases are that you get them in the tropics. And in the tropics is where you get the indigenous people with that are commonly known as non-whites, or known as black Africans. So I guess it's racist because you're saying that these diseases come from the tropics and black people live there. I guess that's their logic there. So they basically have this drive that is going through all the different academic subjects, trying to remove white people from it. And as I say, it's mainly white people that are doing this. While the nominally conservative government has paid lip service to making higher education more politically neutral, universities have only continued to double down on their agendas, with over 60 schools signing up to a supposed race equality charter last year, in which universities would be awarded race equality badges if they sufficiently decolonize their coursework and enforce leftist ideology through the policing of microaggressions, for example. So they get given a special award based on how many white people they have managed to replace in the subjects that they are actually studying. The incredible thing is that we're funding this. We are funding all this self-harm that we are doing to ourselves. And it's going on at every level of our education system. And what we have here, we have money that should be going on helping people to invent new things. And instead of that, £27 million is being spent on these daft projects that are basically just serving to remove white people from everything. We're basically removing our own heritage. We're disinheriting ourselves with these projects. And the more people that speak up about it, the better. So I am glad that Jacob Rees-Mogg has highlighted this. And of course, we highlight these things here at Radio Albion all the time, especially on the Daily Nationalist. Well, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.